Okay, good morning or good afternoon, everyone, depending on where you are. Welcome to Coach the Coach Practicum 2, Class 2. And I'm Jackie Gartman, and it is, what is tonight? It's December 21st already, holy moly. And I feel like I'm forgetting something in my header. Oh, yes, it was the October group, Class C, the Captivating Caterpillars, as I now call you. So good morning, everybody. I hope everybody is well. And I thought we'd just start with Lisa. Lisa's question before I hit the recording, which was, Lisa, you just want to repeat that?
Yeah.
You're asking a question about, why don't you repeat that so for those of you who didn't catch it.
Excuse me. It was, as I was practicing doing the work, we were going through a belief that was something like my husband is abusive. It wasn't that severe, but it was something like that. And we started talking about, well, gosh, the turnaround for that doesn't really work, or one of the turnarounds doesn't really work, and wondering how to get through that or how to change the wording so that it feels complete.
So a couple of I have a couple of responses to that. But first of all, let me ask you a question. You don't remember the belief you were working? It was something related to my husband being
paper.
Okay, because that would be helpful to know.
It wasn't that severe. It was my husband isn't listening to me or something like that. But then we started thinking, well, gosh, how do we, when it gets to something more severe, how do we work through that?
Okay. So were you having an issue with my husband doesn't listen to me?
Yes.
You were. And
yes.
So what and it was in reference to the turnaround.
Exactly.
Okay. So what turn do you remember what turnaround you came up with?
Gosh, I should be more prepared, Jackie.
Oh, that's okay. I'm just trying to help you work through this. So do you remember which one you got stuck on? Was it the self, the other, the opposite? And it's okay if you don't remember. My husband doesn't listen to me.
I don't listen to him. I don't.
Okay.
Listen to me.
So
Oh, here it is. Okay.
Oh, okay. Good.
He shouldn't make me feel guilty. And then the opposite is he should make me feel guilty. And that doesn't feel even helpful. And then we said, well, if that one's not helpful, what if it was, you know, he shouldn't be abusing me. And then, okay, he should be abusing me. How do we get through that turnaround or do we just ignore it?
So was the abusive thought that you eventually worked toward, was that real for your client or was that more of a theoretical conversation?
It was theoretical. It was me and another coach, and we were like, well, gosh, we can't even get through this. He should make me feel guilty. So what would we do if we had an abusive, you know, something that was obviously, I feel really bad even saying that.
Yeah. Okay. So let me respond to the thought that you were actually working. He shouldn't make me feel guilty. I might reword that a little bit into he makes me feel guilty.
Okay.
It's a little bit easier to work with. So he makes me feel guilty. What would be the opposite?
He doesn't make me feel guilty.
Yeah. And what would be to the self?
I make him feel guilty.
That's to the other.
That's the other.
I make him feel guilty.
I make myself feel guilty.
Yeah, I make myself feel guilty. Does that seem a little different?
Oh, yeah.
Now that I've modified the language? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's saying the same thing. My husband shouldn't make me feel guilty. He makes me feel guilty. A little shorter, a little bit more succinct.
Yes.
Right? And the turnarounds sound like they're maybe a little bit more pointed.
Yes.
Or
and that makes
or
me wonder, how do I know when I have a good sentence to begin with? Oh, my goodness.
Well, it's practice. So don't put so much pressure on yourself. You're just learning, right? I mean, this is what we're doing in class. So you, as you guys practice with one another, which is why we have you work together in duets or, you know, in groups, when you get to the turnarounds and it feels really clunky or just it feels like maybe it's not as potent as it could be, mm-hmm. that's where you want to maybe go back and really look at the quality of the thought. Can you make this? So I'm always looking at how can I make this the most succinct, simple, direct, and declarative. So I just took out a couple words. He makes me feel guilty.
And that feels so much better, all three of the turnarounds.
Yeah, yeah. Because there's probably, and really the idea, you guys, behind the turnarounds, and we're going to get into this in our next class in January, is really to look for the projection. So when we're judging other people, which is why we use the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, it's because people are mirrors for our thinking. And judging others allows you to see parts of yourself that you're hiding from yourself. So this belief that her husband makes her feel guilty, she probably does a pretty good job making herself feel guilty.
Mm.
Right? And there are probably times where she makes or tries to make him feel guilty. Right? And so it puts the limelight, if you will, kind of the focus on the projection. Because you can take responsibility for that. You can't change what other people do. And so even if there is a kernel of truth that maybe her husband is doing it, my hunch is she's doing that to herself to some degree. Because no one can really make you feel anything without your permission or without your approval. So the reason she probably gets plugged into that is because maybe she does feel guilty for something or does feel bad about something. And maybe her thinking causes her to feel guilty. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally.
Okay. All right. Now, the other point I want to make is this theoretical discussion you had about, well, what if I'm coaching someone whose husband or partner is abusive, right? How do you do the – is that the question? How do you do the work on that?
Yes. How do you make those turnarounds feel good?
Well, first of all, let me just say something up front about working with these kinds of emotionally tender thoughts. If anyone has ever experienced something traumatic like being abused or rape, murder, incest, or any kind of psychological trauma that they haven't processed or integrated, I would probably refer them out to a therapist or contact their family or have them contact their family physician for a referral to a trauma specialist. So it's really important to remember that a life coach is to a therapist as a personal trainer is to a doctor. So a doctor helps unhealthy people heal, and a personal trainer helps healthy people achieve maximum performance, if you will. And a therapist helps mentally unhealthy people find wellness. And a life coach helps emotionally healthy people create more satisfying, meaningful lives in the areas of career, relationships, finances, et cetera. So that's something you want to keep in mind, because if I had a client who came to me and said, maybe for the very first time, my husband is abusing me, I would not be coaching that person. That is just kind of as my ethical response. You may have seen Byron Katie coach people who have been abused or who have experienced trauma. But what you don't see on camera is all the support people around her who are helping that person once that person has gone through the work with Byron Katie. Because she does do the work with rape survivors and incest survivors and people who have been abused. So, you know, one of the things that I think when she does the work with people who have been abused or gone through something traumatic like this, is the idea is you want to help the person at their request, by the way, because it's always people who have volunteered, who have worked with Katie in this way, but to find freedom from being a victim, from their suffering. And she doesn't in any way kind of condone anything that's happening, because when you think about it, when you turn that around, my husband should be abusing me, it does sound, or people take away from that, the inference that there's some kind of approval or condonement for that. And we are in no way condoning that. Byron Katie does not condone that. And same for anything else that maybe is even a little less emotionally tender. You know, sometimes we have reactions to that. And it's not, the work is not about that. It's about what happens when you argue with what happened. Because as long as you're arguing, let's say, let's take something a little less tender, like my husband shouldn't be yelling at me. My husband should be yelling at me. And so there's where you want to make sure that there's this understanding inside of you first, and then also with the client, that this isn't about saying, oh, yeah, my husband just, he should yell at me. It's not about accepting what's unacceptable. It's about stopping that war with reality that he is yelling at you. So there's in no way a suggestion that it was their fault. But really that when you believe it should stop raining, for example, or that baby shouldn't die, or that your husband shouldn't abuse you or yelled at you, you lose 100% of the time. This stuff happens. And believing otherwise really doesn't stop it from being that reality. So, you know, it's about helping someone to be at peace with whatever the ugly circumstances are that occurred. Because when you think about, like, babies shouldn't die and you're at war with that, you can't help from that place of upset. When you can come to a place of peace and calm, maybe you start to take efforts. Maybe you donate extra money to third world efforts, or you volunteer your time in shelters. But if you're so upset about it and you're so you're arguing with what's happening, you don't do anything helpful or positive from that place. So it's actually easier to make a positive change in the world and bring around peace in your world on a microcosm or on a macrocosm when you're at peace with yourself. Does that make sense, you guys?
Yes.
Yeah, so basically, Byron mm-hmm. Katie says, if you want to make a difference in the world, start with yourself. If you can end the war in your head, then you're one step closer to making a difference in what you kind of see in the world. So it's really about empowering yourself. So my husband should abuse me. My husband should yell at me, because he is. And accepting that reality and recognizing, where do you yell at yourself? Where are you mean to yourself? Or maybe your husband did that 5 years ago. He's no longer doing that. He might have held your hand to the fire then. Where are you holding your hand to the fire? Where are you being mean to yourself? Maybe by staying in a situation where you're, you know, where you're getting hurt. Or maybe you call yourself mean in reality or in your head. So really arguing with the injustices of the world doesn't really help anyone, their situation, your children. Suffering just doesn't help. So that was a long answer to your question, Lisa. Was that helpful to hear that?
It was so helpful. And just okay, that good. Sentence, stopping the war with reality.
Yeah.
And that's what this is all about. That clarifies everything.
Okay, good. Good. I'm really glad you asked that question. It usually comes up, but sometimes it doesn't. And I think that needs to be addressed for sure. What do we do when someone has this really catalytic event going on in their life? How do you do the work on that? And again, I would refer the person out. I might not even do the work on that, even if the person has been in therapy for it. You know, I might wait until I've really built a very safe, trusting relationship with that person. So this is kind of something you have to feel your way through, and really know the work pretty well. Because these issues can be very emotionally tender. So, okay. Any other questions about the work or how your experience is going, what's come up for you, anything that you're getting caught up in or entangled in? Or...
Can I ask a
Okay. No other questions. That's what I'm hearing. Okay. I'll be around at the end. So if anything comes up for you that occurs to you, I'll stay over a few more minutes. But did everyone do your Judge Your Neighbor worksheets and
yes.
bring a completed one to class? Okay, great. Awesome. Any questions
yes.
about that? No? Okay.
Nope.
All right, great. We're going to use the Judge Your Neighbor worksheets as the basis for our coaching today. And these worksheets are really designed to collect thoughts. In fact, they are intended to collect a multitude or a plethora of thoughts, as you probably have noticed if you filled one out for yourself. And what we'll be doing in our coaching duets today is having the coach on deck, who's ever up to coach today, have the client, who's ever going to be the client, read up to the first three responses from the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. So we're not going to have, just for the purpose of class today, you're not going to have the client go through the entire worksheet or you're going to take up all your time. So just up to the first three responses, usually the first one or two are plenty, because from there you will probably be able to frame up a painful thought. It might already have been framed up for you. So you're only going to choose one, although you may hear several, and it'll be your job as the coach to take one of those stressful beliefs to inquiry by doing the work like we did last week. So it'll be pretty much a repeat of last week, except for the fact that you now can play around with some of those sub-questions, which is in your binder from today's class. And those sub-questions come after question three, how do you react? What happens when you believe the thought? And they are, how do you treat yourself in this situation? How do you treat others in this situation? And how do you feel in your body? Okay. So, again, you don't have to use sub-questions, but if you feel so inclined and you want to experiment, you can use one or all three if you'd like. So that's the little caveat for today. If we get through the turnaround, that's great, but remember that this is not a race to the turnaround and not to rush through the questions. Remember, it's a meditative practice, really, really important. And, of course, this is an opportunity for you guys to play with and experiment with really making sure that those thoughts that you frame up are succinct, direct, and declarative, of course, without losing their meaning. Okay? So, when you're listening to your client, and as observers, you could be doing this too. This is a great opportunity for you guys as you're listening to start to play with how might you modify these, frame up these painful thoughts. And there's a couple ways you can do this. You can just, you know, if you hear two or three, you can read them back to the client. So what I hear you saying is you think your kid should be cleaning up, you think your kid should be more respectful, you think your kid should be more polite, for example. And then you could just say which one of those resonates with you the most or causes you the most angst. Or with your ear to the ground, you can listen for repetitive thoughts. But sometimes when I'm using the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, I hear a lot of repetitive thoughts, sometimes competitive too. And, you know, if you hear thoughts that repeat like a religion, you can use the HAT tool. So what I hear you saying is you believe your kids aren't respecting you. Tell me where I'm wrong. Okay. Any questions about that? What we'll be doing. Okay, so we will start. Sarah, I know you volunteered, but before I call on you, I want to defer to anyone who has never coached in any of the practicum classes. I know Tessa hasn't coached, but I don't think she comes to these classes live. Hi, Tessa, if you're there. And Joanna, don't see that you've coached in any of the practicum classes. Tell me where I'm wrong.
You are not wrong, Jackie. I'm here.
Okay. Would you like an opportunity to coach today?
Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Terrific. Okay. So we will start with Joanna. And who wants to be the client? I'm going to read some names of people who, according to my records, have not been the client before. Rachel, Ada, and I think Adrian's been the client once.
I'll be a client.
Who's this?
This is
Ada.
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. So you brought your Judge Your Neighbor worksheet to class?
I did. Yeah.
Terrific. Okay. So, Joanna, any questions before we start about what you're going to be doing?
No. I'm fine. I'm sure you will stop
okay.
me if I'm going wrong.
Okay. And if you need to stop and ask me a question, that's what I'm here for. So
okay, great.
Everybody else, I want you to be active observers. Again, listen for those painful thoughts, write them down, modify them. What would you do if you were in the coaching seat? And then I'm going to check in with a couple of you for some feedback later on. Okay, Joanna, I am ready when you are.
Okay, great. Okay, so hi, Aida. How are you?
Hi, Joanna. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. So you did your Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, right?
Yes, I did.
Great. So I want you to do me a favor, and you are going to read for me the first three parts of the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet.
Okay. Okay. The first one, the first question I answered, I am heartbroken with my husband because he lied to me about his sexual orientation, and I feel rejected, and I feel like I ruined my chance to heal from past sexual trauma by being in a healthy, loving marriage relationship.
Okay.
And then the second question, how do you want them to change? I want my husband to reassure me that if he wants to stay in the marriage, that he won't abandon my daughter and myself, or to tell me the truth about what exactly he wants. And then in this situation, my advice to my husband would be to find out the truth about what he wants and to prioritize the marriage and family if that's what he wants. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. So from listening to the three questions that you answered, I think that we're seeing a core factor right now, which is your husband, basically, and your husband slash your marriage, all right? I want to ask you something, though. While we try to frame up a good limiting belief for you, in this situation, what would you want him to change?
I mean, I think I wrote down.
Yeah, in question two, you said that you want him to reassure you, right?
Right. I think the truth is, I really don't know if anything can change. But I think from what he said to me, which is, you know, that
I don't know, whatever about his sexual orientation, but that he wants to be married. So then, so I just wrote that in this situation, I just want some kind of reassurance that
mm-hmm.
that is the truth and that's not another lie, I guess, if that makes sense.
Okay, yes, yes, definitely. All right, so for you to be happy or happier in this situation right now, what do you need him to say or to do? You want him to say his truth? Tell me where I'm wrong.
Yeah, in the sense of, like, I mean, I would like to know, yeah, what is, you know, is this the truth or is this not the truth? I mean, yeah.
Okay, all right. And, all right, my last question for you then. What experience do you want to get out of this? Or what experience do you never want to have again?
I think I don't ever want to feel betrayed like this, vulnerable, helpless, rejected,
mm-hmm.
broken, worthless.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So maybe we can frame up a limiting belief here for you. Would you like us to do one based or centered more around your husband, or do you want us to do one more centered about you? Which one feels truer for you? Which direction do you want us to go in?
I guess it would be myself, I guess.
Okay, all right, great. For yourself, so we're going to work on something for yourself.
Joanna, I'm having trouble hearing you. It sounds like you're underwater. Is anyone else straining to hear her?
Yeah.
Me? Yeah. Are you on a speaker or?
I'm on Skype. Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I'm on Skype. So I think that may be the problem.
Okay.
One second.
I don't know how. Oh, that sounds a little bit better.
Okay. Are you hearing me any better?
Yeah, I think that's a little bit better. There's
yeah.
times where I felt like it was like really hard to hear you. Okay.
Okay.
Try that again.
Sorry. Okay, great. Okay. So, Aida, what I was saying is, or asking is which direction you wanted to go into. Should we focus on a limiting belief centered around your husband, or should we focus on a limiting belief centered around you?
Okay. So I'm going to stop you here just for a moment, Joanna.
Uh-huh.
So,
mm-hmm.
This is really, you're at this kind of juncture right here where there's a lot of limiting beliefs. So this
yeah.
is where you want to step into your leadership shoes, and
mm-hmm.
you're going to have to take a little bit of a coaching risk here, and like that ear to the ground thinking that you've been, you know, or listening that you've been doing. What
mm-hmm.
I would recommend is read back to her maybe a couple, two, three thoughts that maybe
right.
were repetitive or that
right.
you have a marmoset response to, and see
mm-hmm.
if any of those resonate for her. It doesn't really matter if the limiting belief is directed at her husband or directed
mm-hmm.
herself. Because remember what I said earlier, that people are a mirror for our thinking. So
okay.
It doesn't really matter. In fact, it's probably even better if it's or would be more potent if it was
mm-hmm.
if the limiting belief was in relation to her husband. So see if you can maybe read back a few limiting beliefs that she might be having and ask her which one of those causes you the most angst or stress. That's where you can ask
okay.
her that question. Okay?
Great. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
All right, Aida.
Yes.
Okay, Aida. So I'm going to read back a couple of the answers you gave before, parts of it, and just take a little time and really listen to it and tell me which one jumps out at you the most, all right? So the first one you had is that you feel heartbroken because your husband did not give you all the information about his sexual orientation, right? The second part, part of it was, I want my husband to reassure me that he wouldn't abandon me and my child. And the third one was that you want to find out the truth about your husband's sexual orientation.
I'm not sure about the third one, but I think the other two are true, yes.
Okay, so which one stands out for you the most? The part where you're heartbroken by your husband, or where you want him to reassure you that he will be there for you and your family?
Okay, so let me understand. So your question would be, like, which one stands out to me the most?
Yes.
I mean, I think the one that I definitely feel in my body, even as I say the sentence, is probably feeling heartbroken about the situation.
Okay. So we're going to you said that you're feeling heartbroken about your husband. Yeah? So we're going to go with that one?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'm writing that one down. I am heartbroken about my husband. So is that true?
Okay. Hold on. We're going to stop right here. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Teaching moment. And you're sounding like you're going underwater again, Shalana. So if you could find that place you were like a minute earlier or a couple minutes earlier, it was a little bit better.
Okay.
So as you're doing that, let me talk to you about this thought. So feeling heartbroken, is that a feeling or a thought? When you say feeling, you framed up the thought as you're feeling heartbroken about your husband. So is that a, when you look at that phrase, is that a feeling or is that a thought?
It's probably a thought.
What makes you think it's a thought?
That is probably a feeling. Because she said she's actually feeling her heart being broken.
Right. Her heart's broken. So assume that probably, we could all probably assume that means that she's sad, right? Her heart is broken, usually infers that she's sad. So if you are going to do the work on that, she is going to say, when you ask, is it true that you're heartbroken? Yes, that's true. You don't want to take feelings to inquiry because feelings are always true.
Okay.
You don't dissolve a feeling, you dissolve a thought. Where do feelings come from? How are they generated or cultivated?
Well, she's feeling it in her body.
Okay, you're standing underwater again. Think about the framework, a framework for coaching.
You're hearing that?
The four components?
Circumstances,
right? In this circumstance, her husband told her that or lied to her about his sexual orientation. That's the circumstance.
Right.
She's heartbroken. Mm-hmm. She's heartbroken, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
What's missing? What's missing that's causing her to feel heartbroken?
The facts about it?
No, we've already got the facts.
Okay, I'm not sure then.
Okay, so let me help you out here. The thought, there's circumstances, right? Her husband lied to her about her sexual orientation. She's feeling sad. There's a feeling there. But what's sandwiched in between there is her thinking, right?
Okay.
Do you want to get to the thought that's causing her to feel so heartbroken? Now, let me just say another piece of this for everybody who's listening. There's some, this is a square one issue that's composed of some clean pain. Important to know there's some clean pain here, right? You know, guys know the difference between clean and dirty pain?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Like when someone dies or there's the death of a dream or, you know, hope that we have, you know, and this falls in that category. This is, there's some, a lot of clean pain here. Okay. But there's also probably some dirty pain too. So, Ada, let me just ask you something. Is this the first time you're really talking about this situation in this class? I mean, have you been getting help around this?
I mean, I've gone to, like, a therapist.
Okay. Okay. The only reason I say that is because I certainly wouldn't want to go further if this is something so emotionally tender or so upsetting that it might not be really helpful to you, and I certainly don't want to leave you hanging, given that we, the nature of this class, we only have about 12 or 15 minutes. So, you know, I just want to check in with you to see how you're doing with all of this, given that this is pretty heavy for you. So how are you in this process right now?
I mean, I think I've been sort of grieving this, but, you know, I think this is something that I don't know how to make the pain go away, so I think this was, like, the first topic that I wanted to address in my neighbor worksheet, and...
Okay, let me, can I ask, and Joanna, I'm going to have you come back in just a second, but I just want to get some clarity here and talk to you just for a minute, so bear with me. So, Ada, is there a belief or an expectation or a thought for you that the pain needs to go away or something around that?
I think I am... I think only because I can't, I feel like I need to go through this pain or I don't know what to do with it. And I've gained a tremendous amount of weight sort of avoiding it. And so I know I need to walk through it and I need to sit with it or do something with it. I'm just not sure why I can't shake it.
So tell me where I'm wrong. Is there a thought that you need to shake this pain or you need to know what to do with the pain?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I need to figure that out before I can stop eating away and trying to make myself feel better.
Okay. So my hunch is that there's a lot of thoughts around the situation, specific to the situation, but what I'm hearing that's more painful is I need to know what to do with the pain. Tell me where I'm wrong.
No, I think that would be right. I mean, I think my gut instinct is that I need to survive this, but I haven't been surviving it. I've just been stuck, and I don't know how.
Okay. So another thought is I won't, there's a part of you that doesn't believe you'll survive this. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, honestly, I feel like I'm standing on the shore I know that there's a tsunami coming. I don't know when. I have a daughter. I emotionally, like, I feel like a lot of my dreams have died finding this out. And so now I feel like I'm in, you know, I have like a few seconds here, but I still don't know how to make it so that we will survive this, if that makes sense. I mean, that is, I think, literally like day and night, that's like the feeling that I have, is like this tsunami is coming. I don't know when, you know, I don't know how to trust my husband, if like what he's saying is right or wrong about, you know, whether he wants to stay married, whether he doesn't. Like, I mean, I think his own stuff is there, but I just don't know how to survive.
let me jump in here for a second. So is the thought, my daughter and I won't survive this? And when you say this, you mean the situation?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Does that feel more resonant than I need to know what to do with the pain?
I think it feels one and the same to me. I don't see the difference.
Okay. So I'm going to have, if you don't mind, I'm going to have Joanna come back in, because I think this would be a much more potent thought to work. And I'm going to just, since both of them kind of feel equal, I'm just, from my experience, I'm just going to pick one for you. And I'm going to have Joanna do the work with you on, I need to know what to do with the pain, because I think they're very much related to each other. Because my hunch is, when you don't think you know what to do with the pain, that's when you believe that you might not survive.
Hmm.
Tell me where I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, that's
exactly
right.
Okay. So, Joanna, thank you for hanging in there with me.
No problem.
Because of the issue, I really wanted to see what was going on. And, you know, and as an overlay, I think there was kind of an underlying thought there, which we just identified a couple different ones, that I think would be probably a lot more effective and powerful than picking the one from the worksheet. So thank you for hanging in there with me. So Joanna, the thought you're going to work with Ada on is, I need to know what to do with the pain.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay?
Great.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Okay, Ada. All right. So we framed up this thought for you. I need to know what to do with the pain. Is
okay.
It true? All right. Can you absolutely know that is true in all circumstances?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So how do you react when you think that thought, I need to know what to do with the pain?
Right.
Sorry? Repeat that for me.
I eat food.
Okay, so you eat. Okay. So when you have that thought, I need to know what to do with the pain. Others. How do you treat others?
How do I treat others?
So you can take your time and just think about the last time that you had that thought that I need to know what to do with the pain. You know, think back. How did you treat others around you?
I mean, I think I've been hiding from others. I mean, I think I've just given up a lot of my relationships.
Oh, okay. All right. So you kind of remove yourself from social activity?
Yeah. Like a lot. Yeah.
Okay, and very important, how do you feel in your body? So when you think that thought, I need to know what to do with this pain, how do you feel, like right now when you think that thought?
I mean, I feel like a very literal, like, ache, like, around my heart, in my heart.
Mm.
Like a tightness.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like just sadness, like just going through my veins, like everywhere in my body.
Okay, tell me a little bit more about the sadness that you feel going through. Can you tell me more about that?
I don't know. What would you want me to say?
No, it's what, it's not what I want you to say, but rather, you see, like, all the previous words that you used, you had an ache, you felt an ache around your heart, you felt tightness, but sadness, you said sadness is going through your body. I'm not sure, you know, I just wanted you to say more about that, about the sadness that's going through your body. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think it feels like free-flowing, like just almost like a waterfall, like just.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So on a scale of, okay, so first of all, tell me, that feels shackles on or shackles off, that feeling that you're getting in your chest?
I think it's hard to tell. I mean, I think with that, it's hard to tell for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but what's the first thing that comes to mind? Do you feel good about it? Is it a shackles off or a shackles on feeling? The first thing that pops in your head?
It feels like shackles on.
Okay, all right. So take your time, and I want you to take a very deep breath for me. And think about it. So how does it feel on a scale of negative 10 where it feels really horrible to a scale of positive 10 where everything is fantastic? Where does that feeling lie for you on that scale?
Okay, Aunt Joanna, I'm going to jump in here. So just for a second. Why this line of questioning about how bad it feels for her?
Okay, because I wasn't sure if, how to put it, boy.
Why do you want her to identify on a scale?
Because I wanted to see how bad it was so that when we do the turnaround, based on what we notice or what we discover in the turnaround, we know we can do it again and see where she lies on the scale again, if it feels any better or any worse.
Okay. So my suggestion would be that if you want to know what she's feeling, because I don't think the objective really is to identify, does it feel like a negative 10 or you know, a negative 2, because that takes her out of her body. Remember that this is a meditation. When you ask where it falls on a scale, now she's leaving that place of inner reflection, and she's trying to come up with a number to please you. Right?
Okay.
You're kind of in the authority position. And really, the purpose of the work is to try and help the client connect with how they feel physically and emotionally when they're married to the belief that she has to do something with the pain. We know it's painful. This thought alone is painful. And so we want to encourage her and make it conducive for her to just
feel like she has the space to reflect on that rather than is it shackles on or shackles off, come up with a number. So even if you, I get what you're saying, and in the turnaround, you can then go back to how does that feel in your body? So as you explore turnarounds, which we probably won't have time to do here today,
mm-hmm.
you could, or even actually before the turnaround, the next question, who would you be without that thought? You could then have her explore what does that feel like in your body without that thought? So then she has the juxtaposition of what it feels in her body with the thought that she needs to do something with the pain and what it feels in her body without the thought.
Okay.
So having her explore more of those physical sensations, given that she's like wasn't sure about what she wanted to say about the sadness, would probably be more helpful. So that she could connect to that next time she has this thought and say, oh, I'm feeling that ache in my heart. I'm feeling that sadness and maybe less inclined to eat or maybe less inclined to hibernate or maybe just have more awareness around what she's feeling.
Okay.
Because that's the issue here is that she's trying to kind of get away from feeling this pain, which is why she's eating, maybe hibernating, because she doesn't think she can survive it. So the more opportunity that you have to help her connect to that, to see that it's not so insurmountable, would be super helpful. Does that make sense, Joanna?
Yes, it does. Quite a bit
okay.
of sense. So
okay, good. I want to make sure that, you know. So, you know,
so
why
now,
you,
why jump to straight into question four?
Excuse me?
Do I jump straight into question four now?
Why don't you try, and then we're going to, because you've gone quite a bit, and I know there's like a lot, I was interrupting a few times, a lot of teaching moments there. Why don't you see if you can close out with four, question four, who would you be without the thought? Have her check in with her body too, and then we'll stop, okay?
Okay, all right. Okay, Aida, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. So the thought that we're working with is, I need to know what to do with the pain. Who would you be without this thought?
I feel vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
I would feel like anything could happen at any moment, and I.
Okay, you said you feel vulnerable at anything can happen. Excited.
Okay, hold on here. Again, Joanna, I'm having trouble really hearing you. I think that Ada said she would feel vulnerable and anything could happen. Did you just say you thought she heard she said excited?
I heard vulnerable, anything can happen, and then I didn't hear her after that. The third word I thought I heard her said was excited.
Oh, did you say that,
Ada?
Did
you say Ada?
No, I said okay. Would feel blindsided.
Oh, blindsided.
Okay.
Let me, Joanne, I'm going to stop it here only because I'm having, it sounds like you're underwater and I'm so straining to hear, and I have a feeling Ada might be straining to hear a little bit too. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Okay.
So, and let me just stop it here and let me help you frame up this thought, this question. In a little bit of a different way, it might be helpful for all of you. So, Ada, who would you be when you are thinking about the situation or when you're with your daughter and your husband and you're feeling sad about the situation? Who would you be without the thought that you need to do something with your pain? So when you're in pain or when you're feeling sad, who would you be without the thought that you need to do something with that?
I think I would feel vulnerable.
Okay. All
right. Like I was kind of living in ignorance or something. Like I feel like initially I almost want to say, like, oh, I would be happy and I would just enjoy what we have together, but then I think it would require me not knowing what I know, and I think I kind of I live on that edge.
Okay. So let me reframe this a little bit differently. When you're by yourself and you're just feeling your feelings and you're feeling sad and scared, who would you be without the thought that you need to do something with those feelings?
I guess I would just be a girl and just let it happen to me.
And what would that look like if you just were a girl and you let those feelings happen to you?
I think then I would really have to feel how painful it feels to let go of this marriage in my head that I thought I was going to have, and this sort of like place of healing that I thought I was going to have. And
so you would let go.
And I would just be that girl, and I would just have to just let that happen to me.
How would that feel to just let go?
I think it would make me feel rejected. And I think it would just sort of affirm sort of like this like that inner trigger of like being abandoned and rejected. Me.
Okay. So let's stop here. One of the things that I just want to say is, so you were at that place where it sounds like without the thought, you might just let go. And then the idea of letting go triggered some of these thoughts that maybe caused you to feel kind of hurt and rejected.
Right, yeah.
Okay. So I just want you to notice that, because that's kind of that go-to kind of place that you go, that story that you tell yourself, right, that causes all of those feelings. But if you were to step back and just, could you give yourself permission to be that little girl and to just feel your feelings without the impetus that you have to do something with them?
I think then I would just get up and just keep walking. I mean, I feel like there's like something that happened. It was done. There's nothing I can do about it. And I would just
You just walk.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you might survive it.
I guess.
Yeah. Maybe more of a possibility that you might survive it. If you gave yourself permission to let go.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm so sorry. We're going to end it here. I wish we could do the turnaround, but I would really encourage you, if you and Joanna want to work offline or if you want to, you know, work on this yourself, but to go through some of these turnarounds for yourself. I need to know what to do with the pain. The opposite, I don't need to know what to do with the pain. Maybe come up, maybe this could be your homework assignment, to come up with three examples of why you don't always need to know what to do with the pain. Because my hunch is that when you think that thought, that's when you start overeating, and that's when you start really resisting the pain. And when we're in resistance, it tells us where we need to be more compassionate with ourselves and more loving with ourselves. So that could be a good homework or assignment for you. And maybe it's sometimes I don't always need to know what to do with the pain. Sometimes the pain knows what to do with us. That would be another turnaround. The pain knows what to do with me. Okay, so just switching gears for a minute. So, Ada, I'm going to leave you with that for a moment before we check in with you. Joanna, how was that for you? I know it was super challenging being on Skype because, like I said, it sounded like you were in, like, 10 feet of water at times. But I wanted to give you this opportunity. How was that for you? This one, by the way, was a little challenging because it was obviously very emotionally tender, and, you know, which is why we often will say, please don't bring up something too emotionally tender, which is kind of why I jumped in and to make sure that Ada has been getting some therapy around this, so I thought it was okay to proceed. But also really great opportunity for all of you, and I probably would have done this with any of you, kind of interjected here and there, because there were so many teaching moments. Because this was such a good demonstration of how there are issues that often are mixed, have a mixed bag of both clean and dirty pain. And I wanted to make sure I got that point across. And I chose that thought on purpose because I thought that might be a helpful thought in order for Ada to maybe work through some of this clean pain. Because there's that clean pain, and then there's the thought that's overlayered on that, right? It's like she's feeling sad, she's feeling heartbroken, and then there's that thought, that story that she tells herself, I'm not going to survive, I need to know what to do with the pain that's causing, exacerbating the clean pain. So that's the dirty pain, what we call dirty pain, that gets layered on top of the clean pain. And it happens to all of us, by the way. You know, our best friend dies. I'll never have a best friend again, right? That's the dirty pain. You know, my husband left me. I'll never find love again. So you could see that there's a lot of clean pain for her, and then there's the dirty pain that's overlaid on top. And as a coach, that's your job, is to find that dirty pain while also holding that space for someone to work through just their feelings. It can be tricky. So, Joanna, how was that for you?
Well, you're right, Jackie. It was a little challenging because of Skype. But putting that aside, I think it was a fantastic learning experience for me especially, and I'm sure for the other cadets as well, because I don't think I've ever had to coach while doing the coaching offline with my other buddies. I never had to quote something this tender, so to speak. So it really helped me to understand how to frame a limiting belief. So it was good for me. I enjoyed it.
Good.
Anything you would have done differently if you could hit the rewind button?
The main thing, there are lots of things I would do differently, but the main thing I would, that last part there, when I was asking her about the body compass, you know, negative
right.
and positive, I would have taken that out because in hindsight,
okay.
you're absolutely correct. She already said that she was sad. So there really
right.
wasn't any reason to go into what level of sadness she was feeling. So I would
mm-hmm.
take that back mostly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, good. That's good self, that's a great self-critique. And, you know, I also want to say just, you know, I really, and I'll say a little bit more, but what I really noticed was you just, your tenacity and your courage for kind of really hanging in there with, you know, a challenging issue like this. I mean, this was, you know, this wasn't, you know, a shallow issue for sure. So I really appreciate, you know, the way that you persevered and you were very grounded and you just kind of went back in there and you took my feedback and you went back in there and you did the things differently. So kudos to you for sure. You did a great
Thank
job.
You.
So observers, anybody want to say anything to Joanna? Give her some feedback. Or any questions about the session?
Jackie, this is Hope, and
yes.
I thought this was such a wonderful learning experience, and thank you so much for your delineation between clean pain and dirty pain.
Mm-hmm.
It was so wonderful. You know, in our group, when we coach each other, we spend a lot of time afterwards talking about, you know, the observers spend a lot of time talking, and what we've come to understand is that we all have different marmoset responses, and it's like a tree that branches out, and we would
mm-hmm.
all, almost like a Christmas tree, right, branches out,
mm-hmm.
and we
mm-hmm.
all, almost always would all lead the client or help the client in different directions, but we almost always all wind up at the star at the top of the tree in the end, and
mm-hmm.
so we've
mm-hmm.
come to really appreciate, we've come to appreciate everyone's individual processes. And so during this, I was thinking, you know, you can't help thinking, well, if I were working with Aida, I would go in this direction, right?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I think I'd wind up in exactly the same place in the end. So it was so interesting to watch
mm-hmm.
you distill it down to, I need to know what to do with the pain, because that's
mm-hmm.
a place I never would have gone to, you know, with my own inclination. But the words that stood out for me right at the beginning were abandonment, abandoned, vulnerable, and worthless. I think I would have probably started there with abandonment. You know, it seemed to me like it was coming down to this feeling of being abandoned was at the core of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe go into the five questions about, well, tell me what's so bad about being abandoned, and, you know, try to go down and down and drill down there. But it also seemed to me like when Aida said, I feel like my dreams have died, that was a marmoset
mm-hmm.
response for me, because I thought, oh, this is really grieving too. This is and I would have
mm-hmm.
said, my hunch is that you're really dealing with grief and grieving right now. Tell me where I'm wrong and see where that
mm-hmm.
goes. So I guess I'm just putting that out there if you want to comment on it, or just as an observation that we have such different routes, all of us, but hopefully
mm-hmm.
we all are able to guide the client to the same place and conclusion and point of growth in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think of, you know, coaching, it's an art, which is there are like all these different fingers, right? There's all these different paths that you can go down. And that's why, you know, there's not one way of coaching. I mean, you hear from all the different instructors how we all have our different, you know, styles. And the way I would coach is not the way Martha would coach, and not the way Terry would coach or Amy would
right.
coach. And we would all probably take different tacks, and often it ends up leading to the very same place. Sometimes it doesn't,
right.
but,
yeah.
You know, sometimes it could go deep. Sometimes it could go even deeper. Like, you would take the thought, you know, he abandoned me, and you might ask the five whys. I might just take the thought, he abandoned me, because I think that's a pretty good thought, because I'm thinking of the turnaround, right?
Exactly.
I'm
that's
thinking,
exactly what I'm
thinking. Wow, just that alone without
yeah.
five whys could help her recognize where she's not dealing with her own pain, which is what I was dealing with more directly, right? Where
exactly.
does she abandon herself?
Exactly.
Where does she abandon
and,
herself?
You know, I was wondering, when you spoke with Lisa earlier and you helped her reframe the limiting belief, mm-hmm. when Aida was talking, I thought, my husband is abandoning me is mm-hmm. it would be a good statement to work with because of the turnarounds. Over time, do we just mm-hmm. sort of naturally know what statement will be we should distill it down to and what's good with the turnarounds? Because it seems like you did that so instantaneously, and it's something that we're yeah. learning. Will we eventually start hearing in the client's own dialogue or storytelling those limiting beliefs and be able to reframe it ourselves into something we can work with turnarounds with?
Well, I'm a living example, yes. Yeah, the more practice you have, the more practice you have, the more it'll become very organic and not even something you have to think about. I agree. And I to your point, you know, my dreams have died. Yeah, that is such a, that phrase really hit home for me too, which is, you know, this is grief. It is all the clean pain. Their dreams have died of what she
right.
had wanted and expected for her life or her marriage and what that was going to look like. And it certainly did not include this, is my hunch. And so there's
yeah.
that, you know, there's, but that layer of I need to do something with the pain keeps her from the grieving process. And you could have gotten there through some of these other beliefs, like he abandoned me or he rejected me. Because
mm-hmm.
that he
right.
is mirroring back what there may be some, well, I don't even know if there's a kernel of truth in that, but he is mirroring back what's going on for her, right? Where she abandons herself. Sorry to be talking about you like this, Aida, in front of you, but that's where the healing needs to begin, is where you
right.
abandon yourself when she doesn't give herself permission to feel this loss, and it's a tremendous loss.
It was
so
helpful, Jackie.
Story, yeah. Good, because there's a story
there
you even heard. Yeah, you heard, and I just wanted to finish that sentence. You
sure.
heard her go into that story a little bit when she imagined who she'd be without the thought. She started to go there, and then it got scary, and so the story came up, right? I'm going to be rejected. I feel too vulnerable. Anything can happen. I'm too exposed, right? That. So you just
mm-hmm.
want to kind of pull
mm-hmm.
back. That's fight or flight. So we dipped her, she dipped her toe in just a little bit, and I pushed it a little bit, and then there's the resistance. And then
Jackie,
I retracted.
It was so helpful.
Yeah.
I just
Good.
Want to say one last thing, and then I will shut up
sure.
so other
yeah,
people
please.
Can talk. But I thought it was so, so helpful when you helped Joanna work with the limiting beliefs, because I was writing them down too, and I wrote down, my husband
mm-hmm.
makes me feel vulnerable. My husband makes me feel worthless. My husband is abandoning me. My husband lies to me. And then I had like this panic attack. I thought, there's a lot, and I don't want the responsibility
mm-hmm.
of choosing the one to work with.
Mm-hmm.
But you showed us how we can ask. We can
mm-hmm.
read them to the clients and say, which one causes you the most angst or stress, and let
mm-hmm.
them choose what to work on. And I thought, oh, that's so simple and so brilliant. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. And it takes the burden off. I mean, that should not be our burden to carry, because that comes from a I know better than you place, and I know it's not a conscious
right.
thought, but when you think you have to have that burden of choosing for someone, it really does come from that mindset of I know you best, and I know what thought would be most helpful. I did it
right.
with her thought, just because she said both of them feel kind of equally painful, so I just chose for
right.
her. But, yeah, in most cases, I come in from the I don't know mind. I usually have a hunch about something, but sometimes I'll just
mm-hmm.
read them back, and sometimes I'll say, I have a hunch that this one's really the most painful for you. Tell me where I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'm good with that too.
Great. Thank you.
Because you want to be wrong. Good. Great. I'm glad. Okay. Anybody else have any, Aida, do you have any feedback for Joanna? Let's check in with you. How are you doing right now?
I mean, it feels a little surreal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like I just kind of stepped in a twilight zone, because I feel
mm-hmm.
like I hear what you guys are saying, and I hear it with,
mm-hmm.
like, my head.
Mm-hmm.
and I can even recognize the truth of it, but it's, again, there's such a, I think, a profound disconnect that I think that you were talking about, where, you know, whatever default narrative that I have, like, comes along and and I can't see that for myself. So in a way, it's very helpful to hear. But on the other hand, it definitely feels a little strange because, you know, yeah, because I really, because, you know, even when I was doing the worksheet, I mean, and I couldn't think of where to go even for myself when I did the worksheet, like the turnarounds. And I,
So here's that theme again. I couldn't figure out where to go. Sort of like I need to do something with the pain. And that my hunch is that that kind of gets in the way of you connecting. Because my hunch is that it... Yeah, sure.
So do you, like, if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, is that I am intellectualizing kind of like a, like my own sort of personal strategy to survive this and therefore not feeling the pain, which is what I need to feel. But what feels strange to me about that is that I feel like I'm, you know, like in increments, I'm feeling it all the time. And I, you know, I, in a lot of ways, I feel like I've grieved so much of it. So why doesn't it, like, what am I missing?
Well, I don't think you're missing anything. And I believe you when you say you're feeling in increments. And my hunch is you probably are in an increments that feels safe to you. And having said that, I think that when it feels scary for you, that's when the stories come up. Because I think that for most people, we haven't really been taught how to feel our feelings or to manage the gardens of our mind. And I know I felt profound grief before. And last time I felt it, about a year and a half ago, I noticed when I gave myself permission to feel my feelings, I stopped it because I got scared. And my story was, I'm going to be depressed. I'm never going to get out of this rabbit hole. This is going to go on forever. When is this going to stop? That was what was going on in the loops of my mind. That was what my lizard was saying. And it was saying that because I was getting scared of feeling, I was feeling my feelings, but I felt like I was out of control. And so the way that I controlled it is with my thinking. So if that makes any sense to you. So one thing, I don't think you're missing anything, but I would love to invite you to just bring some awareness to when you allow yourself to feel the grief, just notice what you're telling yourself as you're experiencing it. Like when I felt it, I know it was like weird. It was like I was feeling it, but I was also watching myself at the same time. And that's what makes the grief process more painful and more exacerbated. Joe Bolte Taylor says it takes 90 seconds to process an emotion and that they come in waves. So when you give yourself permission to feel your feelings, you'll notice that it takes about 90 seconds. Now, 10 minutes later, a half hour later, you might experience that wave again. But the reason why it takes other people so much longer is because when they feel their feelings, they start to tell themselves a story. It's fight or flight. It's normal, and it happens. Does that make – I don't even know if that answers your question, Ada. Does it?
I think so. I'm not
– Okay. Sure. Yeah, it's – there's no answer here. And I don't want to insinuate that you're doing something wrong or bad or you're not doing it right, to trust yourself, because if it's coming out in increments, that's a good thing. Just notice what you're telling yourself, like I said earlier. Notice what you're doing to maybe keep where you think you're keeping yourself safe, which is, you know, the story that you tell yourself as you're grieving. I'll never survive this. Or when you reach for that cookie or whatever you're doing to eat, ask yourself, what's going on? Why am I reaching for the cookie? Oh, I'm feeling fat. What am I telling myself? I'm telling myself, I'm never going to survive this. Or when will it be over? Or whatever those things that you tell yourself. And we all tell ourselves that stuff. Just as a way for you to stay connected.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And you may find that maybe you'll give yourself just maybe a little bit more space to feel what you're feeling in a way that feels maybe a little safer. And you can even say to yourself, I'm alone, I'm safe, nothing bad's going to happen. I can let myself be sad. And sometimes I'll even put a timer on. Kind of a little strategy I have, because my thought is I'm never going to get, when I went through that experience, I'm like, this is going to last forever. That was what I was telling myself. So I put a little timer on for 5 minutes, and somehow that helped me feel like, okay, that's 5 minutes. And then after 5 minutes, I didn't even need that time. I need 90 seconds or about 2 minutes. And that wave subsided, but only because I gave myself permission. Okay.
Thank you.
Does that help? Does that make sense? Does that?
Yeah, no, that helps. That helps. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like being in, this is square one. And if you remember Martha's book, In Finding Your Own North Star, being in square one feels like you're in Muxu. It feels surreal. It's a very, when you go through these catalytic events, it feels profoundly, deeply, very sad, like your world has fallen apart and you're swirling around in all this muck. And it's hard to tell. That's the mantra. And that's okay. It's hard to tell, and that's okay. Give yourself permission, because it's the most loving and compassionate thing you could do for yourself, to allow yourself to feel what you're feeling. No one died from feeling their feelings.
Okay. Thank you.
So you're welcome, my dear. So, Joanna, I wanted to get back to you about what I said earlier. I'm so glad that this was a great learning experience for you and all of you. Again, you were so tenacious, and I love how grounded you stayed throughout the whole entire session. For you, I would continue to practice and work on one of the things, and I want to point this out to everybody, is I want you guys to work on bringing the situation, when you bringing the situation, really customizing it into your questions. And I did a couple of demonstrations of that, and I'm not sure if you guys caught it. But for example, in like the first, that third question, how do you react? What happens when you believe this thought? So when you have, so let me see how I can customize it. So, and I think I did this earlier, but when you believe that you need to do something, you don't have to answer this either. When you believe you need to do something with the pain and you're in pain when you're thinking about the situation, or when you're with your husband and you're thinking you need to do something with the pain, how do you react? How do you treat yourself? So rather than others, maybe it's a little bit more pointed. How do you treat yourself when you believe you need to do something with your pain? Because it's a thought directed at herself. Now, if it's a thought directed at her husband, like the one Hope offered, my husband abandoned me, you could then say, how do you treat your husband when you believe that he abandoned you? That would be really interesting in her mind or even in reality.
Yeah.
How do you, mm-hmm. how do you treat yourself? So think about how you can really customize those questions so that you make the situation specific to the circumstance so that your client can more readily access their feelings and behaviors. Because when you say, how do you react, what happens when you believe this thought that, you know, you should do something with your pain, it's harder to access how you feel versus when you're in pain and you believe you need to do something with that pain, how do you react? Oh, well, I eat a bag of Oreos, right? Or I get into bed and watch TV. I'm just making stuff up. Or I don't take phone calls. Or I don't, you know, accept invitations to go out with people. Can you guys see the difference between that? How much more easily it might be
yeah.
for the client?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be good practice for all of you, for every single question. How do you feel in your body? When you're sad and you're believing that you need to do something with that sadness, that pain, how does that feel in your body when you think you need to do something? Because to me, that would feel like pressure. Okay. All right. So I was hoping to get to another duet, but I live in perpetual creative response to whatever arises, and I just felt like we were rushing it, and I don't want to do that. So I think this was a juicy enough issue. And Ada, I want to encourage you to, you know, do whatever you need to do to take care of yourself. If you want to raise your hand to get coached or finish this with Joanna or, you know, deal with it privately or, you know, if you're still in therapy, take it to therapy. But please, you know, take care of yourself because, as you know, in these classes, we can't always, sometimes people are left hanging. It's just the nature. You know, if you need any kind of support, you know, I'm available too. So raise your hand or reach out to me if you need some. But any other questions or comments before I say goodbye to all of you? We're going to get into some turnarounds in our next class, deep into turnarounds. So there's, please check your binder for the assignment, for the pre-work assignment, because we're going to be taking your limiting beliefs and turning around to opposite concepts next time. So all of you are going to be participating. And at the end of that class, I promise you guys are going to feel a lot more confident and competent with turning thoughts around. Okay, any other questions or comments about anything?
Hi, Jackie. Joanna again.
Yes, Joanna.
Okay. So I just want to get this clear in my head, all right? Aida had quite a few thoughts, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know schematically I should use my marmoset and jot down notes about what she said, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a situation like this one where the client has several thoughts, what you're saying to me, let me make sure I'm understanding this right, is that I should take a leadership position and select one for the client, or do I ask the client after jotting down a couple of them and reading it back which one is better for them?
Yeah, so you can have a marmoset response about them. About, you know, and you could say, my hunch is this particular thought, maybe it was repetitive,
mm-hmm.
really sounds to me like it's painful. Tell me where I'm wrong. Or I really mm-hmm. prefer, especially at this stage of the game where you guys are just kind of dipping your toe into the water, I
mm-hmm.
really prefer that you make it easy and simple on yourself and just read some of the thoughts back to them. So what I'm hearing
okay.
you say, Ada, is that this situation ruined your opportunity to heal your sexual trauma, that your husband should reassure you that he won't abandon you, that you think he's abandoning you, that your husband should tell you the truth about his orientation. Which one of these causes you the most stress, or is the most stressful, or the most painful? And you can use your own words. And then have her choose. And then from there, now you've focused it. And she might say, well, you know, yeah, it's more around my husband, you know, should tell me his truth. Or my husband should reassure me that he won't betray me again. That might be a thought, too. And then you could either frame up that thought, or you might say, you know what, this thought could use a little more specificity. You know, a little bit more drilling down. Like, maybe it's a little too general. So you might, like Hope said, she goes, I might use the five lies on he abandoned me. No right or wrong. I might have just taken that thought right to inquiry. Remember, even if she used the five lies and she drills down, she might have come to something even more painful or more powerful. Or she could just go right back up the ladder and go, you know what? I think that abandoned me one sounds painful enough. So, long answer to your question. I prefer at this stage of the game, if you hear an onslaught of thoughts, to just read back to them. And there may be three or four or five, and let the client choose. And that way you know for sure that they're, you're meeting your client where they're at.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, anybody else?
I have one. This is Katrina.
Yes, Katrina.
Okay, so when Aida hit the question, when you posed it, who would you be without this thought, and she started to answer it, then she pulled back and went back into her story. If it was a real session, would that indicate that she wasn't, that is there anything that would, that a client would say that would make you think maybe they're not ready for the turnarounds, or the turnarounds won't be effective? Would that be something that would make you sort of stop the session at that point? Does that make sense?
Oh, but because she started to go into her story a little bit?
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily use that at my, as my litmus test for not proceeding to the turnarounds, because that's just kind of that resistance popping up, and that actually is good information for me to have. Sometimes there's, how do I say this in a way that makes sense? If we have stories or thoughts or patterns of thinking that we've been holding on to for a long time, you're not just going to dissolve that thought immediately. So whatever I get from that question for who would you be without that thought is okay. It informs me how much resistance there is.
Okay.
And so you could see that I reworded it to see if there was any room there, if I reworded it or space there for her to connect to who she would be when she's in pain if she didn't have the thought that she needed to do something with it.
Right.
If she took it that, and then I pushed the envelope a little bit to see if there was more, and then that those thoughts got triggered again, that the old stuff got triggered again.
Right.
And that's okay. I backed off, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And that's what you do. Back off. It's okay.
Yeah.
Back off. And then I would still move forward.
Okay.
Now, in real life, if Ada was my client and she's telling me this, I don't know if I would do really the work on this situation. It feels, it makes you, I'd have to kind of feel through this. If I did it, it would be very, I've done the work for a long time, I'd make sure to do it very gently and very tenderly. And again, knowing that she's in therapy was the only reason why I proceeded with this at all. That was a judgment call on my behalf. Because if she was my client, I would definitely recommend that she get some professional help around this, considering what came out with some this trauma that she acknowledged.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it helps. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, anybody else? Nope. All right, you guys. Thank you, Joanna. You were awesome. And Ada, thank you, too, for, you know, jumping in and being vulnerable and giving us an opportunity. Sorry, there was a little prodding and poking there. And but thank you for having the courage to share what was going on for you. And please, you guys, post any questions you have on the forum. And I think I'm not talking to you guys till January. Oh, my God. Have a wonderful holiday and a new year. And I'm here if you guys need me. And if not, I will see you for the turnaround class.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Happy
You're
holiday.
Welcome.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
You too.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.